Naturally Speaking.
Hi, and welcome to Naturally Speaking, the podcast of the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine. I'm James Bergen.
And I'm Karen Hotop. Today we're starting a special series of podcasts called
Masters of Science
and Research. Here we will be finding out about the Institute's master's programs. What are they? What do they aim to teach? And most importantly, what kind of research do students actually get to conduct?
There are a number of master's programs run by or in collaboration with the Institute. We caught up with overall program coordinator, Professor Barbara Mabel, to find out a bit more about what these courses are.
I'm the coordinator of the PGT Cluster in Animal and Plant Sciences, and I also coordinate the Key Research Skills course. That's a generic skills course that's offered through the Institute. The Animal and Plant Sciences Cluster, the idea is that you bring together courses where there might be overlap. Our cluster is a little bit different because within the Institute we have a lot of sharing, but the other programs within the cluster are, there's an MSc in Food Security.
Run by the Institute of Molecular, Cell and Systems Biology, but coordinated by the Institute's own Professor Ruth Zadox.
A Master's of Veterinary Public Health.
Run by the School of Veterinary Medicine.
And a new online e-learning course in Wildlife and Livestock Management that's just starting this year. Those courses are more specialized and they don't have many options at the moment, and so there isn't as much opportunity for sharing. But within the Institute, we have our two MSc programs and an MRes program where students can choose from the same set of courses so that they can get a very broad background and they can customize their master's degree towards their own particular interests.
So the three courses run directly in the Institute comprise of two taught masters and one master's of research. These are the MSc in Quantitative Methods in Biodiversity, Conservation, and Epidemiology, the MSc in Animal Ethics, Welfare, and Law, and the MRes in Ecology and Environmental Biology.
All gloriously following the Institute's own name in being both long and terrible for forming acronyms.
Okay. Let's just call them the Quantitative, the Welfare, and the MRes courses.
We are going to be taking these courses one podcast at a time, starting with the Quantitative Masters. We caught up with Senior Lecturer and Coordinator, Dr. Roman Beek, to find out more about it.
The course has been around for, 5 years now, and it really came out of the idea that for people who want to work on conservation issues or emerging disease problems, or even theoretical problems in ecology and evolution, there's generally a combination of generic and specialized skills, in particular quantitative skills, that will really help them to do this kind of work, but they're not commonly taught in master's programs. So our idea was to create a master's program that teaches them especially these quantitative skills, but in a way that still allows them to do many different things and to go into many different careers later on.
So the course runs over an entire year, with the first two semesters comprising taught classes and the last an independent research project. The aim is to mold the student into a well-rounded, competent scientist.
Our aim in the first term is to really teach them what we call key research skills. And there's three components to that. We first want them to have experience with Program R, the industry standard of working with data. So we introduce them to that. Second component is that we want to give them statistical training, and that's covering basics, but it takes them all the way to versatile statistical tools that allow researchers to make the best inference from real-world data sets. And then the third component of the key research skills is scientific communication. So we're trying to teach them how to communicate effectively to different audiences. And essentially, it's about conveying scientific information to the right audience in the most effective and clear way. So all of that happens during the first semester. They all go through the same program. There's also a course in measuring biodiversity. And then during the second semester, they get to choose from more specialized courses. There's a range of options for them available at that point. It goes from population models to introduction to Bayesian statistics, molecular spatial analyses, to taxonomy and species identification.
There is a tremendous amount of flexibility in this course, allowing the quantitative students to tailor their learning to their own interests. They can even take classes from the welfare programme if they want. This is one of the master's real strengths, and something Professor Mabel was keen to reinforce.
When we designed these courses, it was this flexibility we had in mind, because we think it's important that students who are interested in animal welfare get a lot of quantitative skills that they wouldn't normally get in other programs. And it's important for the quantitative students to have the opportunity to select from a broader range of biological questions that they might want to answer.
However, the most exciting part of the course is the independent research project, where students work intimately with institute staff on a topic of their choosing. So, how does this work?
They're basically encouraged to seek out people in the institute who do work that interests them and to develop a project together. And they often do that quite early when they arrive here, so that by the time that the project comes around, they know what they want to do. And that can be a range of things. I mean, some of them go and do field work, some do lab work or a combination of both, and some of them work on existing data sets. So because we have this emphasis on quantitative skills, oftentimes it makes a lot of sense to really apply those skills to large existing data sets, which would be unrealistic to collect themselves over the course of a 4 months project. So the main point really is to give them an opportunity to apply what they've learned in the taught components.
Through these components, the course aims to arm students with the tools for their future careers, and their goals are aimed high.
Many of our students do PhD afterwards. This year, for example, I think at least a third of them either have a PhD position secured or are very likely to get one in the near future. But that's not the only career path that students choose when they finish here with us. So we have others that end up working for NGOs, government agencies, or that work in science education and training. So quite a wide spectrum.
Ultimately, one of the reasons the course is so effective is that it does, in a very real way, reflect the very nature of the Institute and what our work is all about.
I mean, we are a mix of ecologists and veterinarians and evolutionary and mathematical biologists who really work on a wide range of both fundamental and applied problems. And many of our staff members also have moved between these fields, which is why I think it feels quite natural to us to teach a program that covers that full range.
And just like in the Institute, a strong feeling of community emerges.
So what's great to see about this program is that despite coming from diverse backgrounds, students really develop a strong sense of community, and they go through the program together. They take some of the courses together. Obviously, at some point, they all make their individual choices, but they work together. They often teach each other or peer review each other's work, and I think that's really rewarding to see how well they work sort of as a cohort. And I think, yeah, there's generally a strong sense of being part of a group. I think also they really appreciate that they get to interact personally with many of the researchers in the Institute, that these people are accessible, that you can go and talk to them and say, I'm interested in the work you do and I'm interested in doing a project, and that is really encouraged.
In this year's student survey, the course received an overall satisfaction rating of 100%, and it is hoped that many of the students will not only go on to publish their research, but that they'll keep in touch with the Institute, leaving the door open for future collaborations.
Okay, that's enough of the sales pitch. What do students really think of the course, and what kind of research do they actually get to do?
Well, last year's students just graduated on the 1st of December, which marks the end of their journey with the Institute. We had the opportunity to chat with a few of them after handing in their final research projects to find out what they learned and what they actually got up to during their time with us.
Okay, so who should we start with?
How about Pablo Capilla?
I'm Pablo. A Spanish student here at the Institute. I studied biology back in Spain, in Madrid, and then after that I really wanted to do a master's and I wanted to do it abroad. I look up a little bit courses and so on, and I found the one here in Glasgow about quantitative methods quite appealing. I mean, it was something that I thought it was very important, you know, to carry on a career in academia, to be able to know how to analyze and handle data and so on. So that's why I came here. So I worked with Barbara Helm, David Dominoni, also Simon Babayan, Tom Barm, and Peter O'Shaughnessy in GasCube. And the main idea, well, Barbara Helm and David have this gradient of urbanization in which they have nest boxes and bird populations breeding there. And last year they found quite surprising differences between urban and rural birds. So the idea of my project was trying to link life history traits and ecology to immunology. So we were looking at the immune system as a possible link between the environment and the ecological consequences. Because fledging success, survival, and in general the health of the birds was reduced in the cities. So yeah, we were trying to link immunity and ecology a little bit.
Now, there's something we have to clarify here. Pablo is Spanish, and his project was largely field-based. And on the off chance you missed it, this last summer in Scotland, well, it never really arrived.
I have this feeling about the Scotland. I think it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, but it can be miserable at the same time. So it can be, for me, it can be the best and the worst. But in general, I have to say that it's been a really nice experience.
We had a number of first-time Glasgow residents join us from slightly warmer climates, just like Pablo, though some had to travel a bit further.
My name is Luis Enrique Hernandez Castro, and I'm from Mexico. I study veterinary medicine, and what motivated me to come here was to study a master's degree related to conservation of wild animals.
Unlike Pablo, though, Luis didn't need to battle the Scottish weather all that often.
My master's project was related to simulation work and modeling infectious disease in Siberian tigers from a population in the Russian Far East. So last year, a PhD student from here showed that canine distemper was really a threat to that population. So from that, my project tried to predict through modeling work if vaccination would be feasible. Well, the results showed that vaccination would benefit them by decreasing the probability of extinction within 50 years.
Now, obviously you can't see the t-shirt Luis was wearing when we interviewed him, but it was covered in the most brilliant Scottish slang words. So what did he make of our wet and windy land?
At the beginning, I didn't know what to expect. All the people that I told I was coming to Scotland to study told me, oh, you're going to struggle with the accent. I didn't know what that means until I came here. But I've learned a lot about the culture, about the people from here. And that's why I'm wearing this t-shirt. I don't completely know all the slangs, but I've learned a lot about the culture, so I would recommend a lot to study the University of Glasgow and the Institute because of all this friendly environment, and which can be seen also in the city. So both things are really important, so I really recommend to come here.
While Luis had a long way to travel, arguably, some of our international students had a bigger culture shock to deal with.
My name is Kennedy Rushasi. I'm from Tanzania. The idea of coming to Glasgow, I think, started in 2011 when I met one of the supervisors, one of the instructors working with the Glasgow University. She had a project in Tanzania, and then I met her. Luckily enough, I was able to work with her since then. Up to now, I've been doing mass drug vaccinations, also doing rabies surveillance. Last year, from the work that we were doing, we decided to come up with another idea of what can be done in one of the small islands in Tanzania, Pemba. Then we developed a proposal, and then I came to do my master's, yeah. So it means I'm here because I'm funded by the Wellcome Trust.
Unlike many of our students, Kennedy had a more personal connection to his research project. His project focused on a major health issue afflicting his country.
We had a very big project from which we developed the small one. Yeah, the big project was aimed at, you know, we have rabies, which is a serious problem in African countries, Tanzania inclusive. So the government decided to start this big project to show that rabies, yeah, though it's a problem, it can be eliminated. So how can it be eliminated? Then they started vaccinating drugs on a large scale, yeah. And then from various sites that we had, we decided, I myself with my supervisor, then we said, now suppose we do a small study on Pemba Island. I was investigating how cases could persist in an area where we have intensive elimination efforts, yeah. could also use the same technique in other places.
During our chat, Kennedy highlighted how much he got out of the friendly institute atmosphere and how much his statistical knowledge had advanced since coming. But he also had a couple of friendly warnings for his fellow Tanzanians joining us.
One is coming for MPH, another one is coming for the same course, but I warned him that you must get prepared to face the stats. Yeah, the good thing. If you are coming to get prepared, because the stats, it's math, so you must be ready. But I told him that I have been lucky because my classmates, everyone was friendly, was very helpful. I don't know the people going to meet, but what I came, what I saw, everything is quite nice. Then I had to warn him about the weather. The weather is not so friendly what we are used to. But as time goes on, you get used. Now I'm used. I can just walk with my shirt like this one, without putting on a sweater. So that's when he has to be prepared because of the weather, which is not nice at all. But with time, it's going to get used. But also must be prepared. He's going to learn some good skills. Starts with good in math. He's going to like the course and he's going to enjoy the department and everything.
While we were able to entice some brilliant international students to come join us, we're also proud that the teaching and working atmosphere here is so strong that many students decided to continue their studies with us.
My name's Daniel. I finished my undergrad here, and compared to the university I started my course in France, I found Glasgow professors and PhD students to be particularly friendly and helpful. I was a lot happier at uni here than I was in France, for sure. It's a great course, and it's a course that's not offered very, you know, anywhere else. And it's something that I feel like, despite doing an undergrad in biology, it's something that I really needed to do before I felt comfortable with going on to do a PhD or something like that.
This was an important revelation. What was it Daniel thought his undergrad was missing? And what did he think we could give him here at the Institute?
In a biology undergrad, you obviously study a lot of biology and you study a lot of how to do a lot of experiments, but you never study how to use the data that you collect. And I felt like that was the one big thing I was missing, which is why I picked this course, because it focuses almost entirely on processing data that you get collected.
Daniel came here with a strong goal and a desire to crunch some hard data. So what project did he apply this motivation to?
So my project focused on determining whether there was diversity in a gene called TLR2 in squirrels. The reason we did this was because TLR2 is an innate immune gene, which was thought to be very static, but some recent work by some people in Sweden has found that it's extremely diverse in bank voles, and that the diversity they found is associated with the animal's susceptibility to Borrelia disease, which causes Lyme disease. However, they've only done it in bank voles, so we were interested in seeing if a different rodent species has the same diversity or not. We picked squirrels in particular because they're obviously common in Scotland and because they get Borrelia quite a lot. We actually found that there wasn't any diversity, unfortunately.
Coming from a cellular and a molecular biology undergrad, Daniel is a great example of how useful that inbuilt flexibility in the course can be.
Because of the way that the course is made, and because of the way that they let you pick which courses to choose and so on, it meant that the fact that I hadn't had any experience didn't make a difference, and they brought me up to level quite quickly with what I needed to know to be able to do this course. You can pick courses which work well together as well, so I picked a surveying course because I found that interesting, and then you can pick, you know, modeling courses and stuff, so you can actually use your survey data to produce actual analyses and results.
Daniel is not the only person we were able to entice away from other fields. We even nabbed a vet looking to diversify her research base.
My name is Sarah Birvan-Williams, and I actually trained here as a veterinary surgeon. I qualified a few years ago and went and got a real job, and then realised it wasn't really for me in industry, so I came back to do the master's course. I really wanted to get back into conservation. It was something that I was interested in my first degree, and I carry the interest through my vet degree as well. So I'd been living in Glasgow. I really love the campus, really love the city. So it was pretty much a no-brainer for me to come back and do the course here.
Now, on a personal note, Sarah's project may have been my favourite. However, that's probably because it was on my favourite animal group and actually helped out with some of the work.
So I was working with Roger Downey with the Trinidadian stream frog, trying to find a link between personality coloration and territorial behavior in this little frog. We found some tentative links between bold personalities and bright coloration in these frogs, not necessarily clear links between territorial behavior and coloration, which was a bit disappointing, but still it does highlight the fact that there are definitely more areas of work that need to be done, linking personality and physical characteristics as well as cognitive abilities in amphibians.
Sarah, unlike many of our quantitative students, was actually working with live animals, and that has a very different feel to just dealing with the data.
I have a lot of experience working with live animals, but it's my first time working with amphibians, so it's a steep learning curve. Getting to know them as individuals, I know that I tried to keep a kind of a professional distance for the sake of my research, but seeing these frogs every day for, you know, near on 3 months, you do get to know them.
And really, Sarah just got what this course was all about, which is clear from her favourite part.
My favourite aspect of the course, by and large, was going out to scene for the GIS work that we did. We spent a week out there in the field station, and it was a fantastic scenery. It was really great to get in and talk to some of the grad students and researchers based out there to see kind of the field work that they've been developing and working on in ongoing projects. And barring the weather, it was spectacular. And I think it really helped gel us as a group, because the majority of us stayed out there throughout the week. We stayed overnight, and, you know, just the social time that we had with each other and with some of the other grad students, that was a great jumping off point for developing our research projects. So for academic and social reasons, I think the scene trip was the best.
And if you'd like to know more about scene, make sure to check out our new blog series, Behind the Scene, brought to you by some of our current master students who are now living and working out there.
Sarah wasn't the only one working with live animals. Pascal Lovell worked on one of the Institute's most well-studied organisms, the brown trout.
So I was working with Professor Metcalf, and we were looking at dominance behaviour in brown trout, specifically how it responds to reduced visibility. So that was to do with both increased turbidity as well as habitat complexity. So part of the project was looking at how to actually quantify dominance behaviour. Part of it was looking at how that's affected by reduced visibility.
Pascal is a Glasgow undergrad survivor. So why he chose to do his master's with us may seem fairly obvious. But what motivated him to come to us 2 years after his first course ended?
I always knew that the teaching would be good. The teaching staff are very helpful around here. But yeah, also, so before coming back to Glasgow, I had worked in conservation, so like looking at quantifying biodiversity and like looking at protected areas, like trying to like almost quantify that, like how important an area is for conservation. So then it sort of naturally occurred to me that, you know, I can measure all this stuff, but I have no idea what to do with any data. You know, because it's fairly easy to do like a line transect. I could look at relative abundance of a species, but then what do you then go on to do? Now I feel that I could go and really contribute to these kind of projects.
Another Glasgow undergrad that stuck with us for his master's is Robert Payton. Rob not only handled the quantitative side of the course, the stats that so many of us struggle with, he positively thrived in it.
I've been working with Jason Mathiopoulos in the Institute, and we've been looking at hidden Markov models for population dynamics, which is sort of an application of hidden Markov models that hasn't really been looked at before. And the Institute's always had this sort of quantitative focus. I did an honours project with Jason on something quite quantitative, and we carried that on. It was a great chance as well to sort of use links that Jason had with other universities. So I spent some time through in St Andrews with Roland Langrock. That was absolutely fantastic. It couldn't have been more helpful. And I took an awful lot from that. So it was sort of a great chance to sort of get to use sort of a link within the department and somewhere else.
Now, you may be wondering, what are Markov models? And I doubt you would be alone, because they are a tricky concept to the uninitiated. So we asked Rob to elaborate on how he used Markov models for his project.
I always think that they're most intuitive in the sort of movement ecology sort of stand front. So if you sort of think about them from, they really model the process of movement by estimating states. So behavioural states, so what is the animal doing at time X? Is it foraging or is it searching for food? Is it doing whatever? And so I think that's quite an intuitive, that's the intuitive one. Ours is less intuitive. Immediately how you transfer what is the behavioural state of a population, well, you don't really have that direct analogy. So what we went with was categorising the population into increasing, decreasing or stable phases, and we estimate it that way.
While Rob's project may sound a bit complex, he reassures us that he has no background in statistics and is only as good as he is because of the strong quantitative credentials of the Institute.
Now, we have so many brilliant master's students, it's hard to narrow down the ones to talk to. But we're running out of time, so we'll restrain ourselves and only talk to one more. And who better than Claire Harris, one-time master's and current PhD student here at the Institute?
I come from Wales originally, but I did my undergrad at Birmingham, so that was in maths and biology, and I kind of wanted to take that forward a bit further, and there wasn't really a lot of opportunity at Birmingham to really combine the two halves of my degree, so that kind of motivated me to come up to Glasgow, to Scotland, and start this course, which I think is probably really unique.
Claire's project focused on rabies in the Americas, and though her project was desk-based, she ended up getting to travel to Brazil to present her findings at a major international conference.
I was working on canine rabies in Latin America and the Caribbean, and I was working with Katie Hansen, Jason Mathiopoulos, and Tiziana Lembo, and we were interested in actually looking at what kind of patterns there were in the rabies cases over the past four decades or so. We had a lot of data from the Pan American Health Organization, which was kind of surveillance across about 20 different countries. And we were interested in seeing what kind of effect the vaccination programs had had on patterns of rabies. So there were quite a few results that came out of that, and I won't go into them all. But I think mainly we found that over the period of time that vaccination had been going on, the length of time in between epidemics had actually shortened, which was a bit unexpected. But yeah, we think this might be to do with the more dogs that are surviving through vaccination are actually kind of giving more susceptibles into the population. So yeah, that would be quite interesting to go into further.
There are many reasons why we like Claire here at the Institute, and the fact that Bayesian statistics was her favourite part of the master's course is only one of them. But one brilliant thing about Claire is that her love and passion for science led her to engage with a wide audience during her time with us.
Yeah, so I've been writing a bit for The Gist magazine, which is Glasgow Insight into Science and Technology. So I've been doing a couple of pieces for them on things that I'm interested in, mainly conservation and disease. And I've also been working with the Glasgow Science Festival on a pantomime in the Edinburgh Fringe that's kind of aimed at promoting science to children and kind of letting everyone know that science is for everyone. So that's been really fun. We've kind of been designing experiments and costumes and everything like that.
And Panto Science, a periodic fable, will actually be touring around Glasgow schools this month with around 40 public engagement activities. And if any of our new master's students would like to get their science communication on, we're always happy to hear from you here at Naturally Speaking.
So that's it for our first installment. We hope you enjoyed hearing about our master's course in quantitative methods in biodiversity, conservation, and epidemiology. And we wish our recently graduated students luck in whatever they go on to do with their degree. But don't go far. Next up, we take a look at the master's in animal ethics, welfare, and law. And trust us, despite the flexibility and overlap, that is an entirely different animal.
This has been Naturally Speaking. I'm James Bergen.
And I'm Karen Hotop.
Tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the Naturally Speaking podcast. If you've got any ideas for future shows or want to get involved, then please contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is naturallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. Naturally Speaking is a podcast from the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine at the University of Glasgow. For more information, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at the NS Podcast, and you can download future episodes and find more information at our blog at naturallyspeakingpodcast.wordpress.com.